Your film is now ready to be shown.
Good morning. I'm Justin Hendricks, editor of Tech Policy Press. We publish news, analysis, and perspectives on issues at the intersection of tech and democracy. Since 1985, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD, has produced research and advocacy on LGBTQ representation in media. Now, the organization has turned its attention to artificial intelligence. In a new report titled Build for Everyone, A Framework for LGBTQ Representation and Safety in AI, GLAAD details the ways that AI impacts and shapes perceptions about the LGBTQ community. At the end of June, I spoke to Jenny Olson about the findings.
Jenny Olson, she, her, TBD. I'm the senior director of the Social Media Safety Program at GLAAD, the national LGBT media advocacy organization.
Jenny, I'm pleased to have you back on the podcast and pleased to go over this report that you've just put out. We're going to talk a little bit about its findings. It's called Build for Everyone, A Framework for LGBTQ Representation and Safety in AI. Up front, your president and CEO, Sarah Kate Ellis, states neutrality is no longer an option. To build AI that is ethical, inclusive, and responsible, tech leaders must proactively embrace intentional practices to create safe products. You, I think as an organization, have always focused on civil rights and of course on your constituency and their particular concerns. What's changed in your view in the last year or two that moved AI from a sort of watch this space topic for GLAAD to something you felt demanded a full framework report now?
Well, it's interesting because actually GLAAD has been working in the field specifically of AI for many years, actually kind of surprisingly, really a long time. Back in 2018, we worked with Alphabet on stuff around LGBT slurs and improving their AI products. Obviously, that was a different time. Obviously, the last couple of years with generative AI and stuff has become more and more urgent and significant. And we have been, you know, doing some stuff through, especially through our Social Media Safety Index work in the AI realm. But yeah, it felt like it was time for a big kind of overview. And it's interesting because in a way, the report is really just outlining things that we already know. Basic best practices around safety, privacy, inclusion, and having companies make good products. It all sounds so simple or so, but it's really, you know, outlining all these things with an LGBT focus. You know, there's been so much research. It really is like collecting a lot of research from other organizations and other groups, you know, ranging from actually the leadership conference put out a really great framework earlier this year or then of last year that we cite a lot, you know, and that these are all concerns in terms, you know, this LGBTQ specific concerns, but of course there are parallels, particularly with other historically marginalized groups and around, yeah, civil rights concerns, privacy concerns, representation concerns and such.
Yeah, in fact, we did have the chance to focus on the leadership conference on civil and human rights innovation framework in a prior episode. I'll make sure to link to that. And then more recently, had an opportunity to participate in an event that they hosted on the issue of civil rights and artificial intelligence in Washington, D.C. through the center they have there. They're one of the groups you know, of course, quote. Others include LGBT tech and UNESCO. A lot of findings here that kind of add shape to the concerns. I'd love to just, in your own words, what are you hearing when you look at that body of research, both in terms of what the community is concerned about, but also the harms that we're seeing emerge? I mean, I think one of the things that really stood out to me in particular is the extent to which baked into a lot of these models, unfortunately, is a lot of bias, a lot of misinformation, a lot of false claims that appear to surface in different ways whenever someone happens to prompt people about LGBTQ plus concerns, or even when they're not, I suppose, you know, when it may be adjacent or even a tangent to what it is they're actually prompting for.
Yeah. And again, there are so many examples across other identity-based groups where you have the sense of like, oh, it makes sense that there is bias in society. And so then there is, you know, so much opportunity for bias to be baked into AI products and in so many different ways. And we cite various examples. I'm trying to think of like something to illustrate, like there are so many examples. One was, I think it was a Wired research, you know, that showed is like, oh, you ask AI to represent LGBT person, and like there's a overrepresent, or there's a, you know, these leaning on a stereotype of like, oh, it's a person with like purple hair, like a white person with purple hair or something. And, you know, in certain ways, like, oh, these things are not surprising. And this is why there needs to be intentionality in countering the, you know, stereotypes and bias and in, you know, diverse representation.
I mean, one of the case studies you give is around conversion therapy in particular, which is, you know, something, of course, you know, you've spent quite a lot of time on and in fact, you know, written about for Tech Policy Press.
Yeah. I mean, that's a particularly powerful example where you have a more vivid sense of the harm. So yeah, last April when Meta had announced that that Llama 4 would be presenting, you know, quote unquote, both sides of an issue, it seemed like a bit of a red flag, you know, to go do some research. And we did do research with the Llama 4 model and found that, and we do a lot of work on the really extraordinarily bad problem of misinformation and harmful promotion of the practice of conversion therapy, which just to say is the idea that you can change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity, which, you know, has been widely denounced by every major medical and psychiatric association. The UN has compared the practice to torture. It is a pseudoscientific and very harmful practice. So prompting the Llama 4 model with the prompt that, you know, would be something that a person who is struggling with their sexual orientation might use, this phrase, help with quote unquote unwanted same-sex attraction, which is one of many phrases that are used by practitioners and promoters of conversion therapy, but again, are also used by folks who might be struggling. So we prompted the model with that phrase. The initial results were good results, if you will, you know, which said conversion therapy is a harmful thing. You know, here are resources for you, like good resources like the Trevor Project or GLAAD, like it's okay to be LGBT. But the second and third prompt returned results, which included a phrasing, let me get the exact phrasing right, you know, but was basically like, if you're seeking a more specific approach, some people have found the following helpful, and then pointing to individuals seeking to change their sexual orientation to an ex-gay organization and promoting conversion therapy. There was a big Axios story about it at the time. And yeah, it's incredibly harmful and dangerous for this kind of, you know, and especially, you know, that this is also health misinformation, right?
You point to the fact that in a way, Meta kind of changed its policies around some of these types of issues. And I'm struck by the idea that this is both a kind of technical problem, you know, that we see bias in LLMs generally, and then we know that it's inherent in these models because of the way that training data is hoovered off the internet. But there's also, you know, a political choice clearly underlying all of this, right? Not only to the major political choice of just releasing these models onto society without substantial testing and training and consideration of the potential impact, but also in the way that they're deployed in a context where there may not be policies that are in place to be concerned with these types of outcomes or with trust and safety even more generally. So I don't know, where do you draw the line between the kind of technical and the political problem here? Is this more one than the other?
That is such a fantastic question and a way that we need to be looking at these things that, there's a tendency to characterize all of it as like, oh, I don't know, it's just so hard. Like, it's just not even solvable, and like, how can you expect this to be solved? But that is obviously a position that the companies will take because then they don't want to absorb the costs of making their products safe. But in terms of the kind of, ideological aspect of it, and again, this particular moment with Meta, Meta now in January of 2025, made some pretty significant, very explicit anti-LGBT policy changes, like massive changes, explicitly saying that it's allowed to call LGBT people mentally ill and abnormal, and using hateful words in their own community guidelines, referring to LGBT people as homosexuals, using this anti-trans term, quote unquote transgenderism, this is actual anti-LGBT rhetoric that's in the community guidelines now from Meta. Like, Meta is, positioning itself as an anti-LGBT company, really. And that is it is an ideological posture. And it's difficult to get one's head around, like, what that means. And in the case of the conversion therapy thing, Meta does actually technically have a policy that prohibits the promotion of conversion therapy content. And yet, the AI product was doing that. We don't know if it still is. Of course, it points to the even larger problem of all of these things is the complete lack of transparency, that we don't have access, we don't know. And all of the kind of waterfall of implications of that in terms of AI and in terms of the platforms and where people, and I'm sure we've all had this experience directly or indirectly, of the, shadow banning or, and again, like, AI being utilized for content moderation and just this, like, God knows what's happening and why, and, that whether there's a person that you can reach or, which is to say that you can't. Anyway, yeah.
A lot of the work that you've done in past has been, both producing these types of reports, producing these types of findings, but then also, communicating directly with tech platforms and, trying to engage with them in constructive ways. When it comes to this work on AI, are there firms that are opening their doors to you at the moment? Do you find that you're able to get those meetings and have a seat at the table?
I mean, we're definitely having a variety of kinds of meetings and kinds of conversations and kinds of, giving input, subject matter expert guidance, key stakeholder guidance. And it is, it's so interesting. On the one hand, one feels incredibly empathetic for the individual people who are working on all of these products, right? And I think sometimes in my work doing the social media safety work with the platforms, I feel aware of trying to have, a positive relationship of, like, and genuinely, that we genuinely want to help companies make their products better. This is a good thing for everyone, and that it's a constructive thing, and that it's a valuable thing. This is valuable input. Obviously, we as an organization, GLAAD as an organization, as an advocacy organization, but also, as individual people, I think, all of us, do have this, these frustrations of, like, if you have problems with your account or whatever, that you're like, what can I do? And, like, but anyway, constantly returning to, like, how can we engage constructively and not give up. You know, we continue to articulate, like, here you go. Here are best practices. Many of these things, you know, most of these things, you already know these things. All we're doing is like returning to the table and saying, like, here are this, you know, here's this helpful information. I totally get that your job is super hard as a person, but you work for a company and you have a, you're producing a product and you do need to make this product safe. And these are the things. And I just constantly try to return to that of like, that these things are possible and they are choices. And this is a little bit of an aside, but it is something that I come back to over and over of one of the reasons that historically we have had regulatory agencies in the US, you know, for all kinds of industry oversight is so that companies are required to absorb the costs themselves of creating safe products, and that society doesn't have to absorb those harms and those costs because industry is just like, well, no, that would be too expensive to put catalytic converters in cars, you know, in the 70s. And so the state of California was like, okay, well, too bad. We are passing legislation that says you have to put catalytic converters on cars because everyone's going to, you know, we're tired of the smog. And you know, the auto industry fought it tooth and nail and was like, it is absolutely impossible. We cannot do this. We cannot do this. Kicking and screaming and, you know, and here we are. We got catalytic converters on cars to, and, you know, things would be a lot worse. And you know, I mean, it's interesting because that was California state legislation at the time, which then obviously became federal legislation. And thank God, this is also this crazy moment. Many of our regulatory agencies are not, it's hard to find the exact words. It's
independent, not independent, well, would be yeah. One way to say it.
Yeah. And just that this is not a normal time. And so, you know, that's all crazy. But like, but nonetheless, that I think the principle that we can hold on to as people is just continue to hold on to, like, wait a minute, these companies need to make, these are $1 trillion companies. They need to make safe products that don't harm society. And those are reasonable expectations.
I want to ask you about two kind of pieces in particular. You know, one that I feel like we've seen a lot of headlines about, we have a lot of demonstrated evidence to point to, especially in the news media, and that's companion bots and companion apps. But I also want to ask about another thing that you point to that I think is still a little more speculative, which is around agentic AI and AI agents and the extent to which those may, you know, hard code, especially some of the bias concerns into systems that, you know, right now we may not think of as necessarily touching AI, but appear to be in the throes of being swept up into whatever this next agentic wave looks like. But maybe we'll start with companion bots. Are there particular things there that you'd leave the listener with? I mean, I think most of our listeners are familiar with some of the more egregious harms, the threats to young people, et cetera. But what do you see in particular with regard to the constituency that GLAAD's concerned with?
I like a few things. I mean, of course, the conversion therapy thing. And I think that one of the things we, you know, again, come back to is like, you know, you want to there to be particularly accurate characterizations of LGBT people. And, you know, when you have a company, you know, this, I just get like emotional with this, you know, the Meta as a company saying that it's okay to call LGBT people mentally ill and abnormal, like what that means, like how harmful that is. And the idea that that is a ideological potentially baked into a product. Anyway, it's just terrifying for one thing. But you know, we're one of the, you know, these basic things that we're saying is like, there should be accurate characterization of LGBT people and issues. And as we know, we're in this, you know, just like firestorm of disinformation, particularly hate-driven disinformation about LGBT people and especially about trans people. And it is this incredible vector for, I mean, wild, like absolute garbage conspiracy theory stuff, like, you know, the stuff that just was like a bunch of stuff last week. The UFC guy who said the transvestigation conspiracy about Michelle Obama, you know, which is, it's like so crazy, off the wall, right? But it's so hateful, so deeply hateful. You know, it's hard to even want to talk about it. And yet it's so important to talk about it because it is so prevalent. And it's so clear that especially anti-trans hate and disinfo is being used as this, it's just this vehicle for this extreme right-wing garbage, but particularly the quote-unquote transvestigation thing, you know, attacking Michelle Obama. There was a huge, for years now, Candace Owen has been perpetuating this about Brigitte Macron, the First Lady of France. And even though it is this categorical, absurd thing, it has to be fact-checked and disproven. Sorry, I'm a little bit going off in a separate direction, but the main point is that it just is so much active use of, manufacturing of anti-LGBT disinformation that, you know, potentially and is being absorbed into models. Another really horrible one is the quote-unquote trans terrorism trope. You know, there are all these hateful tropes. And the quote-unquote trans terrorism trope, we've done a little bit of testing on some models. And one model in particular, Grok, returns really complete bullshit, you know, saying that this is a real thing, which it is not. And it is repeatedly, you know, every fact-checking organization in the world has done fact-check reporting on this. And we know, you know, trans people are actually exponentially, you know, subjected to violence and are not violent. And the percentage is like, I don't have it in front of me, but just this like minuscule, you know, and of course, when you think about it for a minute, it's like, obviously, like the vast majority of terrorism and violent acts and yada, da, 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 are cis straight men. And we know in the field of hate and disinfo, there's a great piece that the Dangerous Speech Project did a few years ago about this, and whatever, everyone does stuff about this, but you know, that especially characterizing a marginalized group of people as violent is a strategy to perpetuate violence against them as a group, which is why all platforms actually have policies that say you cannot do that. We have a list of protected characteristics groups. You can't say particularly, oh, Muslims are terrorists, Muslims are violent, because this is a thing, it's a trope for actually, yeah, perpetuating violence against them or anyway. So like, you know, this, you know, in terms of the kind of AI aspect of it, you know, those kinds of hateful tropes being ingested or incorporated into models, you know, is a real concern. And other forms of those kinds of other categories around these just unbelievable levels of mischaracterizations of trans healthcare is another thing, you know, mischaracterizations of, you know, the idea that being trans is an ideology, this other phrase, you know, everything I'm like, quote unquote, transgenderism is this made up thing to try to characterize being trans as an ideology as opposed to just being an inherent part of who we are. Anyway, you know, the list goes on. Just to say the last thing about it, you know, that I think I'm also really always trying to convey is just in this very human way of like how horrible this is and harmful to people. And because, you know, there's often this kind of like, well, show us the quote, you know, show us the real world harms. Like, it's like, this is the real world harm, like living in a reality where you are just constantly under attack for who you are. Anyway, yeah.
Well, let me ask also about agentic AI. And, you know, that is, of course, the buzzword in Silicon Valley and seems to be where a lot of the investment is focused on kind of baking these systems into everything we do from personal finance to health to managing our own communications and information. Can you speak to the dangers there as you outlined the report?
So there's some great stuff in the Leadership Conference Framework, a research that, you know, that they did and that we looked at. I do want to acknowledge, it's like, oh my God, we stand on the shoulders of so many people who've also been doing this work for years and years and years. And there are years and years and years of examples of predictive AI. You know, we're talking about, we're using the phrasing around agentic AI, but predictive AI, you know, historically around, you know, discriminatory impacts in, yeah, like, housing and loans and when we pause and think about it, you know, again, to go back to the issue of, you know, just bias being baked into the models, you know, it is easy to see how there can be problematic outcomes, problematic impacts.
You know, one thing we've reported on at Tech Policy Press and talked to you about before, of course, along with your colleagues, that GLAAD has been doing for the last few years is the Social Media Safety Index, which, you know, you just put out the latest version of that just, you know, earlier this year as well. And of course, every year it's sort of a bad report card for the major platforms. This year, you know, platforms in some cases falling backwards, YouTube falling, Meta falling, I believe only TikTok holding steady in terms of your assessment of their approach to LGBTQ safety. I'm interested in your view on kind of where there are intersections. I mean, clearly there's the technical one. You know, there's the reality that if the platforms fail to moderate anti-LGBTQ hate, that just creates more fodder for LLMs to essentially hoover up claims that may then result in more bias and more hate and more otherwise erroneous information, you know, coursing through them. But I don't know, how do you think about that relationship, what it tells us about the information environment for LGBTQ people?
Thanks for asking that. And I mean, it's interesting, and it was interesting putting out the Social Media Safety Index and feeling like, you know, it's just so demoralizing and frustrating and to feel like, oh my God, we're just saying the same thing. It can be, you know, so hard that as an organization in terms of our advocacy work that we come up against this situation of like, okay, here we are. It's another terrible year. How do you advocate for change? And I think we do keep trying to come back to, you know, a public education approach, if you will, of helping individual people understand that it does not have to be like this. It should not be like this. These are not insurmountable problems. They are problems and issues that companies are refusing to solve, refusing to address meaningfully. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't continue to advocate that they should solve them. And just to say, you know, the kind of two primary issues that we talk about a lot are, of course, that platforms need to do a better job mitigating anti-LGBT hate and disinfo at the same time that they also need to do a better job at not suppressing legitimate LGBT expression, shadow banning, removing accounts. And, you know, we see both things happening. And we can, you know, one can, you know, look at that and be like, oh, yeah, that would be hard. Yes, sounds hard. Also, you're a $1 trillion company. I don't know, put some resources into it. And I mean, seriously, like it is not actually unreasonable. And which is, but I'm just try to keep coming back to that. And then also, you know, especially around the, this is going to sound a little like woo woo or cheesy or something, but like I do, or like personal, I do 12-step programs, and there's this concept in 12-step of participation is the key to harmony. And which is also, or, you know, AKA like democracy, you know, is another concept that we have. Participation, you know, and that means that, and I don't know, I just, you know, that I feel so like idealistic, and like, it's like, I don't know, it would be really great if we could just be like, hi, I'm showing up, but I want to participate. And like, that's a good thing. And this is all a good thing. And we want our products that have such consequential impact on our environment and our society and like everything about our lives, that, you know, we use this word safety, but like, and then somehow that sounds like unreasonable to expect that things should be safe. Like somehow you don't deserve safety, but like, everyone does deserve to feel safe on social media and in AI and in the world. And that we should all be able to agree on that. And that and to be in environments where there is so much hate and lies and garbage impacts all of us. And like, we all should want to be connected to our neighbors and yeah, just feel safe and able to participate.
These seem like they should be simple things to say. I'm grateful that you're saying them. I'm grateful that you're saying them to these tech firms and that you're doing this great work and important work at GLAAD to bring these results together. And it's Pride Month. And I suppose I should say happy Pride. I think that it's important that you put this out at this moment, you know, and I hope that the next time I speak to you, Jenny, that we do have maybe, you know, some wins to point to, but I'm fairly certain you're laying the ground for that.
Well, thank you, and happy LGBTQ Pride Month to you as well, and to everyone out there. And yeah, I think we just, you know, hold on to like the metrics of our wins and achievements is not, you know, whether we succeed in this banging our head against the wall with the companies, you know, but really just that we maintain our own sanity. And I do this all the time. I love quoting Maria Ressa, who is on our advisory committee, who says, you know, hold the line. We are just, if nothing else, we are holding the line that we know how the world should be. And that is what we can do.
Well, if there is an executive in an AI firm that wants to get in touch, that feels like they want to do something to, you know, just advance basic human dignity and democracy, where can they find you? Maybe GLAAD.org.
GLAAD.org, yes. Yeah, but yes. And we are here and we are giving our guidance to companies all the time, and it's valuable. And yes, we can help you make your products safer for LGBT people and for everyone.
Jenny Olson, thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
That's it for this episode. I hope you'll send your feedback. You can write to me at justin@techpolicy.press. Thanks to Jenny Olson, thanks to my co-founder Brian Jones, and thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Press.